Thank you, Ms. McCollum. Greetings, brethren. I'm going to open with an additional prayer. Father, I come before you and ask for your anointing upon this congregation. Bless them with a portion of your Spirit so that they might grow in wisdom and understanding. Let their hearing help them. You have prepared me to present this. Let me not speak my words, Father, but your words. I ask for your anointing and I ask for it on this assembly. And the congregation said, this is my 40th feast. Some people call it Tabernacles, Sukkot, Ingathering. And I really would like to say thank you to all of you for having helped me and my family have a very special feast. And it's always a delight. We prepare for it. We look forward to it. The sad thing is that all things must come to an end and we have to go back home. But hopefully we've been rejuvenated. We have been revitalized so that we can go back with new words and things to study. I want to also thank the people that Tim and Angie and Mark and Linda Roth, they asked me to, for the last couple of years, to do the coffee service in the back. It's a lot of work. This year I've been very blessed to have Greg help me. He's back there and doing jumping jacks. And it's... And I want to thank all the people who have helped, the teens. Some have come back and just, can we help? And the men and women who have helped, because coffee makes it kind of fun. On my computer at home, I have, and I think I can say this, I have the drawings, the plans for the third temple, and I study them. And when I do, I have not noticed a coffee bar. There is, however, a parking garage underneath. So that's true. All right. So if I take a pause from time to time and look at my notes like Tim did, that bear with me. My wife said, look, you know, if you forget something as you go along the way, you can always say at my age, you have a senior moment. So, well, in keeping with the theme, ancient ways for end time days, I want to do a little something here. And I move around a lot. Rico and I talked. You don't know me, all right, but you'll find out about me. And I always tell people when I meet them, sometimes in this messianic movement, people want to tell themselves, and I came out of this tragedy and that. And I always tell people, don't tell people how bad you are. Don't do that. They'll find that out soon enough. So, but what I would like to do is to... all the people that are here at the feast, now there's so many have gone, but all the people that are here in this assembly for their first time, this is their first feast, please stand. Please stand. Don't be ashamed. Just stand so that we can see. Yes. Okay. Now I want to do something a little differently, and Tim and Mark and others who have done this for a long time know this, but this is going to be part of my message, and you will see how this develops, all right? What, before you do this, I'm going to ask everybody to stand for just, and then I'm going to count down. So go ahead and stand. All right? And look around. You look around at your brethren. If you want to know where the house of Israel is, this is part of it. This is part of the house of Israel, all right? But all of those who have been observing Sukkot or the feast, for 5 years or less, please sit. Just sit. Go ahead and sit. And the rest keep standing. All right. Now you look around and you see some who is, those who have been observing for 10 years or less, go ahead and sit. And as we count down, 15 years, go ahead and sit. Keep looking around. 20 years or less, go ahead and sit. All right, 25 years or less. All right, what you're looking at here are people who have been observing a Feast of Tabernacles, whether it's perfect or not, for 30 years or more. When did Yeshua start his ministry? When he was 30 years of age. All right, those of you that have been doing it less than 40 years, Go ahead and sit. All right. What I want you people to observe, these are your teachers. Now, maybe they're not prepared to be teachers as you would think. I hastened a word to use the word elders. Tim would understand why I hastened to do that, right? But these are your elders in the sense they're growing up. We see Mr. Wheelock. I don't see Dr. Merritt. But there are a number of people out here I recognize. And this for me is like my 40th feast. And it took me 5 years. You can go ahead and sit. Thank you very much. So we look around and we want to see our teachers. And I've got to get the, here it is. Whoops, went too far. Well, maybe we're not there. Isaiah, in the book of Isaiah, chapter 30, in verse 20 through 22 says this. It's an end time prophecy about your teachers. And though the Eternal gives you the bread of adversity and the water of affliction, yet your teachers will not be removed into a corner anymore. But your eyes will see your teachers. Your ears shall hear a word behind you saying, this is the way, walk there in it. Wherever you turn, whether you turn to the right or you turn to the left, your teacher will be there to guide you. So what you see today is your teachers. Now the other day, this is not self-promotion, but I'm going to tell you something. The other day, I did a breakout session on Luke chapter 21. You know, Rico was presenting that day, so I told him, I said, well, I'll tell you what. If nobody shows up, I will turn out the lights in my room, lock the door, and I'll come up by you. But there were people there. What I would encourage you to do is to go and to listen to that. This is not self-promotion. There is a message in Luke chapter 21 that deals with teachers. It deals with end-time prophecies. It flows, and it flows very well. So there is a time coming. We have a little bit of time right now. We have the freedom to be up here and to teach one another, to instruct and to help one another. But I believe the time is coming, and it's very near, when this will not be possible. So that's why I'd encourage you to do that. All right. I happen to bring my spiritual bags with me. You guys brought your luggage with you, your spiritual baggage? Are we not always hauling around some baggage? Let me open this up and see what I have in here. Well, there's my tallit. Ah, yes, my first thing. I carry a white stone. My name is Tom Eltrich, or Thomas Eltrich. It's a good Celtic name, just like Kelly, and like a lot of other of your names. But you know, someday there's a promise that our Messiah is going to give us a new name. And it says in Revelation 2:17, he who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. To him who overcomes, to him I will give some of the hidden manna, and I will give him a white stone, and a new name written on that stone, which no one knows but he who receives it. So that's one of the things that I carry in my spiritual baggage. Not everything you see in our spiritual baggage is bad. Some things are. You know, we carry baggage. I came out of a Catholic church. I wanted to be a priest at one time. I grew up in a very disciplined Catholic family. I'm not ashamed of that. The thing is that it taught me some things. We all have different backgrounds. But when I was young, when I was 10 years old, I started looking in the scriptures of our family Bible and reading things. And I'd ask my father, why don't we keep the Sabbath? Why do we eat pork? You see, what I believe, and I have this very strong belief, that our Father started working and calling us when we were young, each and every one. We didn't always respond then, but the process started. And as time would go on, that would come out. I'm anxious to know what kind of a name he will give me. What else do we have in here? Oh, this book. This book, not so good. This is a book of remembrance I have written. It has in it my sins. It has in it my regrets. A young man spoke the other day, 19 years of age. And like many young men, when he got finished in women, he said, I have no regrets. I have regrets. Our father has regrets. And those regrets are, he says, when he made Saul king over Israel, he regretted it. And in the Hebrew, it means regret. So we live our life right now. We can be forgiven. Someone asked me mentioned the other day, it's really hard for him to believe that our father could forgive him. And the common thing is that's our penalty of the things we have done. There are people, my family, who have been soldiers, Marines. And when you take another human's life, you live with deep regrets because you see those eyes as the fire goes out in those eyes of the life you took. You don't think. You live with regret. So you have to understand all these different types of things that we have in our book. We're forgiven. And I think that was probably when Paul talked about a lot of people to question it. What did Paul say? You know, he had this thorn in the flesh. Okay, he had this thorn in the flesh that nothing could be healed. And I think he had similar thing as post-traumatic stress syndrome, if you wish. He regretted the death of Stephen. He oversaw that. And of the other saints that he had seen put into prison or put to death. And that was a hard thing for him to bear. But what did the Father say through the Spirit? You're forgiven, and my grace is sufficient for you. And someday those things will be removed. Ah, what else do I have in here? Ah, yes. Takes a little bit sometimes to get these things unbound. And there's several that. I carry a sword. This is a non-commissioned officer sword in the U.S. Marine Corps. It's something I'm very pleased to be able to hold. This is not mine. This is my son's. My sons are Marines. When Dr. Merritt wrote about Luke and going down the Bark River and all those things, my children were friends with his children, and they went through high school together, through college. They're still friends to this day. And I sat there and put one of my sons, in the place of Luke. And that's like who he is and all the things he walked and do. But we have this sword. You know, we can live by this sword. We can die by this sword. Remember Yeshua asked at that last Passover how many swords they had, and they said they had a couple. All right. So we can live and die by that sword, and sometimes we have to use that. But I have something even more precious in here, something very special. I bet you have it too. The scriptures. This is the other sword. This is a sword. This is a sword. The thing with this sword, it's a little different than that sword. This one is the one that will instruct you and that you can go against the adversary with and defeat him. That one, not so good, except on flesh. But this is the one that you should be able to use. And you have to be skilled. As with this, you have to be skilled with this sword. Scriptures, I call hope and promise. I wanted to make a staff. I didn't get one done this year. I was a teacher, all right? I started out in engineering, and then I went back to college and got my degree in education. And what I taught I would have been your shop teacher. I would have taught you drafting and design and woodworking and building construction. That's what I did. And so when you do those type of things, a lot of instruction goes to the students. You have to have something to work by. We use the textbooks. This is our textbook. Are we willing to die for this particular thing? I hope so. Tomorrow, Mr. Wheelock, someone whom I really admire, respect, who's been a mentor and a teacher to me, we'll talk about this feast. Being a teacher, before we go on to the main topic, Tim had talking about this seventh day. And there's something I want to interject. This comes from my understanding. You may or may not agree, and it's not a matter. I'm not saying this is absolutely certain. But I want to take you to Revelation chapter 20, verse 1, and we'll read through this because before I go to the main topic, it's about this day. This is how I see this part. Starting in verse 1, "Then I saw an angel coming down from heaven, holding the key of the abyss and the great chain in his hand. And he laid hold of the dragon, the serpent of old, who was the devil and Satan, and bound him for 1,000 years. And he threw him into the abyss and shut it and sealed it over, so that he would not deceive the nations any longer until 1,000 years were completed. After these things, he must be released for a short time. Then I saw thrones, and they that sat on them, and judgment was given to them. And I saw the souls of those who had been beheaded because of their testimony of Yeshua and because of the word of Elohim, and those who had not worshipped the beast or his image and had not received the mark on their forehead and on their hand. And they came to life and reigned with the Messiah for 1,000 years. The rest of the dead did not come to life until 1,000 years were completed. This is the first resurrection. Blessed and holy is the one who has part of the first resurrection. Over these the second death has no power, but they will be priests of Elohim and of the Messiah, and will reign with him for 1,000 years. When 1,000 years were completed, Satan will be released from his prison, and he will come out to deceive the nations which are in the four corners of the earth, Gog and Magog, to gather them together for the war. The number of them is like the sand of the seashore, and they come up on the broad plain of the earth and surround the camp of the saints and the beloved city. And fire came down from heaven and devoured them. And the devil who had deceived them was thrown into the lake of fire and brimstone, where the beast and the false prophets were also. And they were tormented day and night forever." It is my belief that this is a time period that happens on this day, at the end of this day, that HaShatan is released for a season. We don't know how long that is, a short period of time, and that these people mass themselves. Now, many people have taught, Chuck Missler and other prophetic people have always, they're talking about, well, Armageddon's just around the corner. Gog and Magog are going to rise. And I go, 1,000 years hasn't passed. Yeshua has not returned and established his kingdom yet. So think about that this day. This is a current event. You know how teachers love current events. Only this is a future current event. So when you go through this day, realize that even, as Tim said, after 1,000 years, can you believe it? After seeing the Messiah rule and all the wonderful things that he has done, there will be still people. It's a testing for those then. We're being tested now. You are here. Others are out doing their thing. So you're going through your test now. But others who have not had that experience have to be tested. That is my belief. And the reason that I mention this is for this purpose. There, as you saw, the people that are here for the first time may have never heard this before. They're still going, hey, what is this about again? And we see the sukkah, you know, we see all the rejoicing and the celebration, but understand that the battles are not over yet. The battles are not finished. So we have to have that in our mind and understand the whole plan that our Father has laid out. All right. Now I want to set the stage before I go to the first things first. Teachers, there are a few people out here that know me. Okay? I have some friends out here that I have known for many years. I have other friends that are a very much shorter period of time. Probably the only one in this audience who really knows me well is my wife, who's been married to me for 33 years. And at the age of 30, our Father blessed me with a beautiful wife. And she has been my helpmate. She's also my checks and balances, because if I get out of line, she pulls me back into line. And that's not in a bad way. I mean, I bet every husband here who has a loving wife, his wife does the same thing. I'm different. Joe Good is a friend of mine. He'll call me. Here a couple weeks ago, I was painting away on a deck and not having a fun-filled day and the wind whipping the paint off the end of the brush and the roller, and he calls. He goes, hey, Tom, need you to look at this. I emailed something to Nancy. Go get it and download it. Okay. And so we go back. But he has a very different style of teaching. You saw him up on the stage. He is my mentor. Teachers need teachers. All of us are to prepare to be teachers. Everybody in this audience, even the children, can teach me something. We can teach each other something. I used to teach kids from second grade to college. The second graders taught me things. They taught me that teaching second graders is a very fatiguing thing. But at the end of a day, I was really kind of happy. But I remember what one second grader taught me was that she came from a very poor household. So in the desk drawer, always kept some crackers or some cookies. And the other kids went out to recess or they had brought treats. She didn't have anything to bring from home for treats. Come here, child. Oh, look what I have for you. So she taught me to have mercy and compassion. If you don't have mercy and compassion, I'll guarantee you, the Father is going to teach it to you. It's better to develop it than to be taught a hard way. He taught me humility. And I'm going to tell you something, this is off, not on the scriptures, but when I ask in prayer, Father, lead me, give me your words, I ask for the Spirit to direct me as I go along. Some of you, that would be very foreign. When coming out of a Catholic background, that's very foreign. If you came out of a Pentecostal background, that would not be foreign. So do this. Try this. If you really want to be bold, but really, really hang on. And that is that the red light? Is time up already? No. Okay, thank you. I was starting to get worried. I look at my watch and I go, what, 20 minutes? Does he want me to be quiet already? All right. Ask the Father to teach you to love what he loves and to hate what he hates. And pray that sincerely. Pray it every day. But if you do, you better be really prepared for what could come your way. So teachers have different styles. Rico is real bubbly and energetic. He has his particular topics and themes. Joe Good is one style. His is different. He'll focus on the temple. Tim is different. Dean Wheelock is different. We're all different. You know, it's kind of like this. We go to the scriptures. I wasn't able to get shafts of wheat. This is sweet sorghum. You can make a flour out of this. It's very pretty, kind of tasty. All right, here's our diet. There's a whole table put before us. But if we only eat the tasty things, like tonight, there will be a kind of a buffet. We've had a chance for buffets. If we always just take the desserts, the tasty little things we like, we don't get a balanced diet, do we? We won't get a balanced diet. So we need all of the scriptures. I'm rather basic, really simple, foundational, kind of earthy. And that's where I come from, so that'll help you understand it. When I taught my children, when they were little, my boys, they're keeping a feast up in Wisconsin. When they were little and raised up, I was their L, their God, lowercase, mind you, or because they depended on me. I wear this head covering because I am under our Father's authority. So when I'm the father of the household and my children are in that household, they're under my authority. They are to learn respect and to obey the rules, obey my commandments of my household as I try to obey the commandments of my Father's household. So they learn that kind of a discipline. We need to learn that. You'll see where I'm going with this in a minute. So our Heavenly Father says in Proverbs 3, verse 11, my son, do not reject the discipline of the Lord or loathe his reproof. For whom the Lord loves, he reproves, even as a father corrects the son whom he delights. This is why the family is so important. The family unit is so important. But if we don't have good structure in the home, that takes things away. The second thing is the example of the teacher. The teacher, when you walk into a classroom, I used to teach inner city school. I've never had the pleasure of teaching any, you know, one of these fancy schools like you'd see in a Hollywood movie or in L.A. I've always had, ever since I started teaching in 1972, I had rough students. Hard, tough students, minority students, or whatever, just really hard-working class students. And I garnered their love and their respect. But I ruled from a very military-type standpoint in my classroom. First thing, I'm the teacher, you're the student. And if you do that in your household, to your children, if you discipline yourself that way, I am the student, you are the teacher, it will help you to understand and to be able to formulate where you need to go. So now this should give you a little bit of an understanding kind of on my teaching style, my nature, who I am. I'm not, you know, a star or a celebrity, nothing. I'm absolutely nothing. But I desire to share with you what I think is important. We need to put first things first. Let's hope that next things first. That was the Proverbs 3, let my son do not reject. What do you think is the test commandment? What do you think is the test commandment? Now, I thought about doing this, but you can't just shout out there. So you can just say in your own head what you think the test commandment is. You have a lot of them to choose from. But I'll tell you what I think the test commandment is. In Exodus 20, verse 1, then the Eternal spoke all these words, saying, I am the Eternal, your Elohim, who brought you out of the land of Mitzrayim, Egypt, out of the house of slavery. You shall have no other gods before me. The sages teach that when Yahuwah, or Yahweh as some of you would say, our Elohim gave the Torah at Mount Sinai, that heaven and earth fell silent and the seas did not roll. In other words, the whole world listened. Isn't that awesome when you stop and think about it? The whole world listened, all of his creation. And he said, there shall be no other Elohim or gods in my presence. So that, to me, is the very first thing, putting first things first. When you walk into that classroom, you establish authority. When you turn to the Father and you say, well, I want to pursue this way of life, you have to recognize he is the authority. He is in charge. I believe one of the biggest problems in the Christian churches as well as in the Messianic is everybody wants to be an authority. But our Father's word is the authority. So anything that I say that isn't of that is commentary, and it's subject for reproof. But when you quote and go by the scriptures and you let your life be instructed by the one who is in charge, then you have it. I'll give you a story that happened in my real life. I used to work at a nuclear power plant, and I did many things. Started out in engineering. Well, got bored with civil engineering, okay. So I go and get my degree and start teaching school. Well, how about we change and do something else? My poor wife has had to be dragged from pillar to post through our journeys and different things we go. But it was all training, you see. So I'm at this power plant, and I'm not a foreman, but I'm a journeyman. And here's the superintendent, here's the general foreman, here's the foreman. It's a chain of command, just like in a military. And the superintendent turns to me, go tell the men to do this. Such and such. You know? Well, I kind of look, well, I'm in trouble here. That would be like me telling Tim Kelly, hey, you know, I don't like this here. Why don't you move this over to here and here over to here? It's just like not done. All right? So I said, I can't do that, sir. And he says, let's go for a walk. So we go outside and we go for a walk. And he says to me, whose authority are you under? Well, think fast, boy. Now, I'm not a child at this point. I said, I'm under your authority. He said, correct. You're under my authority. If I give you an instruction to go and do, and you go do it, whose authority are you acting on, yours or mine? Well, yours. Then go do it. I learned that when you're under the authority of the Father, when you place yourself under his authority and you act according to his word, no one can question you. They have no position to question you. You're acting on his authority. You're under his word. But you best be careful that you don't interject your word. Tim Kelly has a cabinet shop. His sons work with him, probably other employees, right, Tim? All right, suppose one of the other suppose his son decides to go out on the shop floor and said, I want you to cut these boards to this dimension. And by the way, close that machine off. I'm going to order a new one. His dad hears word of it, and he says to his son, boy, come here. And he says, where do you get off speaking for me? And I hear in the back of this voice when I get up to teach, this is what goes through my head. Who are you, O man, to speak for me? And we have to stop and think about that. When we get up to teach, if I get up here in front of you to teach, I am going to be held dearly responsible for every word I say before you. So I have to be very, very careful of the things that I choose to say and do. This presentation was done I wrote it a couple of months ago by inspiration. And I know it's subject to change right to the very moment I open my mouth to speak, because I'm not sure if something is inspiring me to say something different. So you have to understand it. What is the very first thing we have to do? If we look at Mark 12, verses 28 and 30, the greatest of the commandments in Mark 12, 28 through 30, the greatest commandments that he gives us two there, repeats them, he condenses them. Love your Elohim with all of you. Wow. Okay. First things first is to obey his every word. We have to understand that when the nations that we live in, I love this country, I love its people, I don't necessarily love its government. All right? There's a difference there. When my sons went to fight, they're combat Marines. They're not guys that sit in an office and do things. They're hardcore frontline kind of guys. So when they go to serve, they serve these people. They serve you. They've already gone to serve the people. I said to my sons, you know, I fear for you because I could lose your life. Miracles happen to them. My whole life and my wife's life with me has been nothing but miracle after miracle. And I hear preachers say, no miracles are happening today. I could fill a book with miracles that have happened in my life. They're not outstanding miracles like some big light appeared in front of me and says, Tom, walk this way. No, but there are miracles because they saved life, spared life. They're just miraculous events. I think we fail to see the miracles that occur in our life. That said, if you obey God, if you put him first, he will open all things to you. I guess I should have moved this out of the way, shouldn't I? Is that better? All right. So you ask, why are you having problems in your life? Well, trials and testing comes. I'll tell you what. When you say, Father, I want to love what you love and hate what you hate, he said, okay, Tom, hang on. Here we go. I'm going to strip you naked. Okay? You know, when you go into the Marine Corps, you do get stripped naked, and they give you everything you want. Then you stand before the drill instructor, and he tells you, I'm going to tear you down and build you up the way you're going to be. This is not a promotion for the Marine Corps. There are many good things. You heard John Merritt's presentation yesterday. And that is very similar with our Father. I commit myself into your hands, Father. You build me as you would have me. And he will take you down and build you back up the way he would want you. Because everything we learn in this world, how to walk, how to act, how to dress, how to think, how to talk, isn't necessarily from him. And maybe he hates the house you live in. He hates your materialistic attitude. He dislikes the music you listen to. He hates the food you eat or the failure to follow his dietary laws. He hates the fact that you fill yourself with treats, but you don't fill yourself with his word. Do you ever think about that? He will take you down and build you back up. All you have to do is give yourself to him. You know, that it sounds like a trite little thing, but it's a very true thing. Commit your life into his hands. And if he chooses to take it, so be it. It's his to take. So we have to do this. This is so important. Matthew 6:24. I have to have a drink here. One moment. I like coffee too, Tim. I would hope that they would have a coffee bar in the Third Temple I don't know. Coffee, by the way, is an Arab drink. That might turn some of you off right there. All right, Matthew 6:24. No one can serve two masters, for either you will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and wealth. For this reason I say to you, do not be worried about your life as to what you will eat or what you will drink, nor for your body as to what you will put on. Is not life more than food, and the body more than clothing? Look at the birds of the air, that they do not sow, nor reap, nor gather into the barns, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not worthy much more than they? And who of you, by being worried, can add a single hour to his life? And why are you worried about clothing? Observe how the lilies of the field grow. They do not toil, nor do they spin. Yet I say to you, not even Solomon in all his glory clothed himself like one of these. But if God so clothes the grass of the field, which is alive today, and tomorrow is thrown into the furnace, will he not do much more to clothe you, you of little faith? Do you not worry then, saying, what will we eat, or what will we drink? What will we wear for clothing? For the Gentiles eagerly seek all these things. For your heavenly Father knows what you need, all these things. But seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be added to you. So do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will care for itself. Each day has enough trouble of its own. Amen. Do you realize that what we really need to do is to put him first? Whenever, and my wife knows this, because I am the head of the family, I am the priest of my household. Whenever I stop putting him first, and I was a contractor, all right, and so I start, well, there's not enough jobs coming in. I don't know how we're going to pay the bills, and it looks like rain, it looks like sun, and she goes, you and Eeyore, you know? So the thing is that what do I do? It's natural for us to get worried and get troubled. And the first thing we throw out is we, instead of hitting our knees or lifting our hands and praying, Father, help me, I'm in trouble, then we try to save ourselves. You know, this is not in the lesson either, but I'll tell you, you know that little analogy, not kindle a fire on the Sabbath? Two things that this guy got in trouble for. Most people don't look at it. They'll look and they'll say, oh yeah, you're one of those guys. You don't cook on the Sabbath. And I don't. Okay, we don't. But first thing is he was disrespectful to the instruction that God gave him. He was rebellious. He waved his fist in the face of God. You ever see the people that are rioting on the streets now in different parts of the world? They're waving their fists. And they're waving their fists at our Father. Do not be one of them. So the first thing he did is he waved his fist at the Father. The second thing is he depended, this is the important thing, it's not talked about much, he depended on himself for his own salvation. We have to eat, right? Every day we eat. So the Eternal said to him, gather twice on a preparation day. Today is the day of preparation, by the way, for tomorrow, which is a holy day. So he told him, gather so that you won't go hungry. Don't kindle a fire, which really means don't let the fire go out. We are to keep this fire burning inside of us. We can't let it go out. We have to keep this fire alive. This is our time of preparation for this coming millennium that we're here. So keep this fire burning, and if you let it go out, you die. So what did the man do? He kindled a fire to cook, to feed himself, which is a representation that he tried, instead of trusting on God for his salvation, he trusted on himself. He trusted on himself. He leaned to himself for his salvation, and it cost him his life. That was the lesson to all of Israel. That's why that's there, and that is a lesson to all of you today and to me. So we have to prepare now in this time, our lifetime, for the world that's coming. This is our preparation day. We're at the sixth day. Just before that millennia. So we need to follow his word. Again, put first things first. Go back to that. 2 Corinthians 10. We are told in 2 Corinthians 10 that everything that we think and do and say is to be brought into captivity. You know, our grandchildren learned a song. Okay? Our grandchildren learned a song. Be careful, little eyes. Be careful, little eyes, what you see. Be careful, little eyes, what you see. For the Father up above is looking down in love. Be careful, little eyes, what you see. Do you not think he knows everything we think, do, and say? He's watching the whole world. He is very in tune and very aware. So it's real easy for a believer to fall into sin. Remember my book of regrets? There's things in here I would share with you as a lesson. There's things in here no one knows except the Father. There are things that you cannot share. So he sees these things. The angels are here. They're here in your presence right now, but you don't see them. They're your protectors. They're your protectors right now, but they see what you do. So if you do something that is not lawful, if you do something that is not right for you to do, if you violate your own conscience, they're aware of it. He's aware of it. It's real easy today in this modern day and age to get online, even for a believer to get online. Go take a little trip down materialism way, order everything you can think of off the internet. It's very easy to go that way and see all the pornography you want. It's real easy that way. Why Mr. Kelly sets in the standards that ladies come here in the presence that they be modestly dressed. Because sometimes you have to avert your eyes. You understand? It's real easy to fall into temptation. It's real easy to sin. It's real easy to lose your patience. And with some people here, I have lost my patience at times. All right? I have friends here for many, many years. If you don't think John Merritt and I have never had cross words, we used to sit at his kitchen table till like 2 and 3 in the morning. We've had some disagreements, but I love him and he loves me. He's my mentor and I've been his. So you understand that we can fall into making some mistakes. Why we need to have love for one another, be gentle with one another, be kind and forgiving with one another. Yes, our swords will clash, all right? But we need to bring those things into check and balance. Always doing that first thing. Have no other gods before me. Because you see, when many things fail, it's our vanity that gets out there. Someone disagrees with you. Well, I don't believe that. Well, he just assaulted your vanity. That's all. You know, it's just so many things that we have to keep not having other gods, not having our vanity, our pride, our materialistic life, even a cup of coffee. You know how hard it is when I'm back there and you all come up there and go, just one more cup. Except for Tim Kelly, I'll give him coffee because I have mercy on the man. He's up here running around, all right? But nonetheless, there's a point when I have to say no. Sorry, it's closed. Some people get upset. I'm sorry. There's a point. Our Father draws a line in the sand too and says, you can't cross this. You know? So we have to be very careful about that. Be careful what our eyes see, what our ears hear, what our hands find it to do, what our heart feels, what our mind thinks on. We have to do that. So what is the first thing we have to do? The first thing that we have to do is kind of a pop quiz right there. Is to make sure that we understand who's the boss, who's in charge. If there's any question on doctrine, go to the scriptures. Go to the scriptures. I told my mother-in-law, this is her second feast. We have a friend with us, this is her first feast. My wife's aunt here, this is her first feast. There's other people that are here because I encouraged them, just prodded them, if you wish, to come. And for some of them, it's their first corporate feast like this. They've kept it in a sukkah, maybe in their backyard, or in a very just a couple of people together. All right, but by coming and doing this, by keeping his commandments, by observing him, he will bless you with his Holy Spirit. Do you know that there are words in here that I do not understand? There is prophecy in here I can't explain. But so much of this over the 40 years has been opened up that I can drop a scriptures on its spine, open it up, and let's begin to study. There's so many things you can share. Mysteries are removed if you obey him. You look at the empty seats that are here. I remember last year when I was here, someone said to me, well, I have to go back and go to work. I said, Go to work. This is a pilgrimage feast. Why would you do that? Well, I'm afraid I'll lose my job. Lose your job. What do you do? Well, there's some of us are teachers and some of us are other things. I said, I see. So what about the Sabbath? Oh, well, sometimes there, you know, when a boss says, you know, sundown's at 6 o'clock about this time of year. Can you be in at 4? Well, I don't want to lose my job, so I go. Really? I'll give you an example from my life. I told you I was Catholic, right? All right. Took me years and years of studying what I study to know about keeping the Sabbath in the holy days and to start this walk was not perfect in any way. All of a sudden, it just impressed on me. Got to do this. Stop right now. I used to officiate at football games. So I go to my principal and say, can't officiate at the games anymore. And oh, by the way, as school started and football season was in, I'm taking off in a couple of weeks to go to the feast. The what? Now, bear this in mind. If you go back to the very early 70s, right at that decade, this was not real common. All right. And in a public school in California where I was teaching to say, well, you know, he says, okay, well, here's what's going to happen. So it was no short time that I was standing before the school board one night. And those who are friends of mine and family know this. I was standing before the school board and it was packed just like this. And I'm going, oh my, Father help me. I'm in deep trouble here. Because the superintendent was there, the principal was there, the newspaper was there, and they put me on trial. Kangaroo court, mind you, but trial nonetheless. And they gave me a chance to speak, and I told them this. Well, I'm going to do what I have to do, and you do what you have to do, and we'll see who wins. And I went to the feast. The whole time I was gone, I had intrepidation. When I came back, guess what? I had my job. You see, it's not good to go against the Father. Now, other people have had bad experiences. I can give you several. My wife has had bad experiences. I don't know, how many principals did you go through? Five. Every year she'd get hired. Okay, I have to take off for the feast. Her life just at school went bad. Every year at the end of the year, that principal was let go. She was let go. Her contract was ended, but the principal was also fired. Early retirement, they got rid of him, whatever it was. Do not. Our Father will defend you. He says, you, here's the sword, but I will be your shield. I will be your shield. I will protect you. Satan has fiery darts that he throws at us, but we're mortal. But he will be our shield and our defense. Have faith. Be strong. Be fervent in faith. And so I would say to the people that are not here, I'd say, where'd you go? Why aren't you here? Why don't you keep the Sabbath completely in the holy days? Because if you do this, he will bless you in knowledge and understanding. He will heal you of your sins. He will be your shield and your defense. You don't have to worry. You can go into battle and you will survive. Trust me, I know. So you have to put him first. Genesis 3:1. Now the serpent was more crafty than other. Oh, yes, deception here. Well, boy, did I miss some things. Let me see if I didn't get too far ahead. A senior moment, pray tell. All right, we'll go back. So I'll get caught up here someplace. We'll leave it there to the little children. That's much better to look at. In Genesis 3, verse 1, now the serpent was more crafty than any beast of the field, which the Lord had made. And he said to woman, indeed, has God said, you shall not eat of any tree of the garden. Verse 2, the woman said to the serpent, from the fruit of the tree of the garden we may eat, but of the fruit of the tree which is in the middle of the garden, God said, you shall not eat from it or touch it or you will die. And the serpent said, you will not surely die, for God knows that in that day you eat from your eyes will be opened and you will be like God, knowing good from evil. Doubt. Doubt is a great thing for destroying things. You know, if you're in warfare, you want to cause confusion, you get the enemy to doubt, to not trust himself. And if you can do that, you've won the battle. So what we have in the Messianic community today, if you want, is that there is a great deal of doubt cast because you have different teachers. Instead of necessarily following the scriptures specifically and teaching from them, they teach their ideas. I don't care about my ideas. I don't want you to care about my ideas. I want to present to you what scripture says, that's all. Because when I start speaking for myself, that voice goes, who are you, O man, to speak for me? Put that in your mind. Who are you, O man, to speak for me? And so when you go before other people and you start teaching and expounding your ideas, and they go, well, I don't see that. just maybe, you might be speaking for yourself instead of the words coming from the Father. You know, this is another reason why a husband and wife can't, if the child does something and the father says, I'm going to beat you senseless, and the mother says, go ahead. But she can't get in and say, oh no, Dad, don't do that, husband. All of a sudden the kid goes, hey, we have a little game going here. Let's see if I can pit them against each other. I bet every parent out here knows exactly they've been down that route because it happens in every household. Kid you, you know, you can't kid with that. It's going to happen. My wife goes, quit those expressions. I kid you not. All right. We're going to move on. So our teachers need to make this simple. You know those little children that you see there, our little grandkids? They're keeping the feast. And so my wife and I try to teach them things. I try to teach them to blow the shofar. And I keep threatening my daughter-in-law. I says, well, okay, I'm going to start Hebrew lessons real soon on them. Of course, if you know me, you know that you would not come to me for Hebrew lessons. You wouldn't come to me for English lessons. I used to write on the blackboard, and once in a while, I have a little dyslexia. Someone here said, well, that's a thing of Judah. I don't know, but once in a while, I would goof words up, and I'd be writing on the blackboard, and the students would go, Mr. E, that word up there, you know. So when you get corrected by your students, you learn to be meek. You learn to be meek. That's teachable. We're to be teachable. We're to be like little children. And we're to explain this in a fashion that little children should understand it. So when you have people, and you know, that are, we need different teachers. We need teachers that teach the very deep things, the very complicated things that go into the Hebrew. And I look at Joe sometimes and I'm going, hey, Joe, will my eyes gloss over, wave your hands? And he's very patient. He's very good. And he's a good friend, and he'll say, okay, back up. So, but we need to reduce things down to a level. Just remember, I'm a very base kind of guy, foundational kind of guy. You need to develop those very foundational skills so that when you go to teach your children, just like Joe has a son who doesn't walk this walk, I have a son who doesn't walk this walk. My other sons do. And one time he said to me, I really want to learn. I go, you don't want to learn. You want to argue. Because if you wanted to learn, you'd shut your mouth and you'd listen and you'd let me teach you. That's true. You would be meek. You would be teachable. So when I come into people sometimes that want to argue, sometimes I get my dander up. Some of you have seen that. All right. But then I go, enough. This person, this conversation comes to an end because the person does not really want to learn. They want to argue. That's a time to be silent. But when a children come, and my grandchildren come to me, they don't want to argue. They go, hey, Grandpa, teach me. My students came to me. Once I had their attention that, look, I'm the boss. You're here to learn. If you don't want to learn, there's the door. And I will help you out that door. Do you know that when Israel goes back to, when Egypt... You know, when the people of Israel, all of us, start to return to the land of Israel, Messiah says, everyone is going to pass under that rod. Each one of us is going to be evaluated in that end time, in that restoration to the land. And he said, one that is found rebellious will be put back into the world, put outside the camp. That means you're subject to the laws of the world and the problems of the world. But the rest will be spared. So why you need to put first things first is you want salvation, you want protection, you want the eternal to be your shield, obey him. And you will have it, guaranteed. Don't have to worry about anything. You fail to do that, fear. Okay? You have two choices. And that's the same as it was in my household as a parent. You can either fear me and respect me and obey my rules, or when they got old enough, there's the door. And they didn't. I have very loving sons. Even a son who is rebellious is a very loving son who calls and says, hey, Dad, I love you. He just doesn't want to hear me. All right. Our Father gave us some very specific instructions. Whoops, went right past it. And this is a Shema. You know, the Shema is not a prayer. Many people pray it like a prayer. It's instruction. Who is it for? For us. And it says here in Deuteronomy 6, 14 through 15, I love it, it's beautiful, but it's instruction. Hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God. The Lord is one. That tells you a lot right in that first sentence. You shall love the Lord, or the Eternal, your El, with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your might. These words which I am commanding you today shall be on your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children, and you shall talk to them when you sit in your house and when you walk by the way, and when you lie down and when you rise up. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and it shall be as frontals in your forehead. In other words, you'll have them on your mind and your heart. Mind and heart. You shall write them on the doorpost of your house and on your gates. And you shall come about when the Lord your God brings you into the land which he swore to your fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to give you great and splendid cities which you did not build, and houses full of good things which you did not fill, and hewn cisterns which you did not dig, vineyards and olive trees which you did not plant, and you eat and are satisfied. Then watch yourself. A warning, that you do not forget the Eternal who brought you from the land of Mitzrayim out of the house of slavery. You shall fear only the Lord your God, and you shall worship him and swear by his name. You shall not follow other gods, any of the gods of the peoples who surround you, for the Lord your God in the midst of you is a jealous God. Otherwise, the anger of the Lord your God will be kindled against you. Remember what I talked about kindling? Don't let that fire go out. He doesn't let his fire go out against you, and he will wipe you off the face of the earth. Whoa. When you stop, and this is your instructions, when you think about this daily, and everything you do from the time you rise up to the time you go to bed, put him first. Put him first in everything of your life. You tune on that radio, you really want to listen to Rush Limbaugh and listen to him go on and on and on, and his inflated ego and all the vulgarities that come out of the music. I love the Rolling Stones yet. I don't love them. I enjoyed the rhythm, okay? And I like some other music, but I've had to learn, you cannot do this, Tom, because it's ungodly. It's against the laws. And I can't listen to hardly anything anymore. And I even have to be careful with some what is called messianic music and prayer and worship music, because some of it is not much more than one step away from plain old rock and roll. And some of it is not correct. So you have to be very careful what your ears hear, what your eyes see, what your mind thinks, and think on his word. There are things in the scriptures we don't understand. I think as time goes on, they will be revealed to us. There's some pretty scholarly people that are in the messianic community today, and there's a lot of arguments and bickering and putting people down, and we can't have that. We just simply cannot have that. Understand to desire and know things that are right and good. But here, someone had mentioned, and I'm getting a red light, so I'm going to hurry here very quickly. This is what you need to do as far as the gospel message. Go to the house of Ephraim, that is Israel, and teach them that there is but one El. He loves them as their father, and they are to respect his authority over them and hearken unto his every word, and they shall be healed of their sins, that is forgiven, and have life everlasting. 48 simple words. Someone asked me, what's the gospel message? I give them 48 simple words. Wow, that didn't take very long. Get their attention. Well, in closing, Matthew 5:19, whoever then annuls one of the least of these commandments and teaches other to do so shall be called least in the kingdom of heaven. And whoever keeps and teaches them shall be called great in the kingdom of heaven. Well, this is your day of preparation, people. This is my day of preparation for that great millennium and for the Sabbath tomorrow. There's a lot of things I don't know. I like this part here. It's in the scriptures. It's also in a very pretty song. I know that someday I may have to pay with my life for what I believe. I'm willing to do that. When you're willing to defend the people of the land, you put your life on the line. I'm willing to no longer depend on this. I'm willing to depend on this sword. But by so doing it, I understand that this could cost my life. But 40 years ago, when I made that decision, I decided this I will die for. And so, to be absent from this body and to be with the Lord is very good. And from what I know of him, it's very good.